Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Tribcast for the 1st of July. I'm reporter Elise Hugh, joined by CEO and editor-in-chief Evan Smith.
Hello.
Managing editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
And Reeve Hamilton subbing in for Ben Philpott.
Hello.
Today we're talking about the Democratic Convention in Corpus, White calling out Obama for stimulus spending, and the Green Party off the ballot. We'll start with you, Reeve.
Okay, what am I talking about? The Democratic Convention?
He's good, isn't he? Yeah.
He's filling in for Ben, so, you know.
I think you're off to a Philpott-like start.
Yeah. Well, the Democratic State Convention was this weekend. It went pretty smoothly. No big hiccups. They had their only real major point of contention was over this Texas two-step process in which you elect your primary candidate by voting and then gathering together and caucusing.
It's part voting, part caucus.
Primacaucus. Yes.
Primacaucus. People were very fired up, sort of on either side, about the two-step. It seemed to quickly become a racial thing on the floor of the convention.
Well, and the history behind this was that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote in Texas. The unusual thing that happened was that the presidential election was not decided by the time it got to Texas. So that was the first thing. And so when it finally got to Texas, the Obama people had figured out how to take advantage of this Texas two-step thing. Hillary had the better ground operation, more money, and won the popular vote.
Well,
Texas.
She had a legacy in the state.
Right. Yeah, she'd
right?
been, she'd 36, been working in the state.
36 years before, when right. Barack Obama was still Barry Obama, middle schooler, Hillary Clinton was living in Austin with her not-yet husband
right.
and a lawyer named Julius Glickman co-managing the George McGovern campaign.
Right.
Right?
Right. So they had some tap roots.
They go back a long way.
That was before the two-step process even existed.
It was, exactly.
Yes.
So Hillary
may have been before there was even a two-step dance, actually. It's long enough ago.
This week on digressions.
It's every week on digressions.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So Hillary wins the primary, but some of the delegates to the national convention are picked, as you say, after the primary voting is done in these caucuses. And the Obama people packed the caucuses. So they won a significant number of delegates for Texas here. And now going forward, they see any effort to undo the primacaucus process, the Texas two-step, as an effort to stop what happened last time from happening, and it's cast in racial terms.
And of course, the other part of this is that the Hispanic community, not monolithically, but largely, was with her.
Right.
So it's sort of the re-emergence of an amount of tension within Hispanics and the Hispanic community and the black community over this. But I really think the larger issue is that it didn't go anywhere. I mean, the great thing is that it didn't become this big conflagration. It sort of ended reasonably amicably.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, they had a debate on the floor. They voted on it. Overwhelmingly, people wanted to keep the two-step process, even though some people argued that it gives people more than one vote. But it also seems to increase participation in politics, which is good.
It gives a late finisher a chance. You know, Hillary did better in the early voting, better organized on the ground, everything. She did better in the early voting than she did on Election Day. And Election Day is also the day the caucuses meet. So, you know, Obama came in with a late finish, and the caucuses were enough to get him a bunch of Texas delegates and on to Denver.
It was also this was one instance of relative harmony at the convention. The chair vote, unlike the Republican convention's chair vote, was an instance of relative harmony, right? Boyd Ritchie got reelected by enough of a margin that it was almost a non-story.
Well, the Democrats did what both parties usually do, which is, you know, the favorite wins the chairman's race. The Republicans did a really unusual thing, turning out Kathy Adams. That was...
Well, in fact, it was so unusual, I think it was the only time in recorded history where a sitting party chair running for re-election was defeated.
Right.
So, I mean, and you know, there's not, it's not as if Boyd Ritchie is a uniformly beloved chair, right?
There have been a few efforts to beat Boyd Ritchie for chairman, at least since I've been in Texas, so.
Right, right.
But he got reelected, and the two-step process ended up being noise but no
right.
fight.
And those were the only two right. sort of... Those are the only two instances of smoke, I guess. The rest was...
Bill White's speech was relatively well-received.
It was very well-received. Yeah. The candidates sort of walking around were well-received, although, they didn't speak till Saturday.
Uh-huh. Now, we should talk about that.
Yeah, we should talk about that. And let me catch you a little cold on something. I didn't prep you for this question, but, you know, when you look at what happened at the Democratic Convention and you look at how they kind of set themselves up for what's going to happen between now and the first week of November, what do you think, what do you see coming out of this? Did White kind of get a bottle rocket going? Did anybody else get any kind of traction here?
I mean, white people were really excited about white. You know, I don't know. Of course, the Democrats are excited about white, but they were very excited. Jeff Weems seemed to get a lot of buzz.
This is the Railroad Commission candidate.
That he might
running against David Porter, Carrillo Slayer.
Right.
That's right.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I saw him at a few of the caucuses in the morning on Friday, and people responded really well. Same with Linda Chavez Thompson. I didn't see very much of Hector Uribe, and I didn't hear much reaction to his speech.
Mm-hmm.
He's running for land commissioner.
And Gilbert was away. His mother passed away.
It's because his mother passed away. But, I mean, most of the focus was on white, you know, which...
Radnofsky,
I know that she got her Sue Wall Street plan into their platform, so that was a success for her, but I didn't hear much about
the Weems thing is interesting because that's a race where, you know, the Republican candidate is not exactly Elvis Presley.
Well, right. It's the only one where they're not up against an incumbent.
He's exactly not Elvis Presley.
Right. He's not even Priscilla Presley.
Right.
He's just sort of invisible, and he's not coming out to play, and Weems is clearly frustrated by... He knows that, you know, in a Republican year, anybody with an R next to their name has an edge. And so if David Porter basically stays in an undisclosed location in Midland for the next 4 months...
Kind of a Rose Garden strategy.
He kind of wins, right? Yeah.
Weems referred to Porter as a groundhog in his speech.
So. Yeah, that'll I'm sure, be the thing that turns the election.
There you go. There's a bumper sticker.
Name calling. Right. What about this Bill White and the Seven Dwarfs thing? I mean, that's the thing that I'm curious about is the degree to which there's any bad feeling about the non-white candidates, non-Bill White, capital W. Right.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask Ross, which I'm planning on looking into, but Javier, is what was the speaking order in the 2006 convention?
Well, it's usually the same. I mean, you know, the conventions typically... I'm trying to think as I say this whether it's mostly the Republicans. They typically put the state candidates on one day and the federal candidates on the other day, and then fiddle around with it as schedules permit.
And it wasn't as if the candidates below the level of governor the last time were any great shakes.
Right.
Or the candidate for governor, Chris Bell.
Well, but you know the candidate for governor generally is
Allison Bell just poked you on Facebook.
Right. Yeah. You know, the candidate for governor is usually sort of the money candidate. That's the candidate with, you know, that's the campaign that has money in it. It's the campaign that the party is most interested because it's the campaign that has money in it. And, you know, that's sort of the centerpiece of the table. But the question is whether the centerpiece candidate is running alone, effectively, or whether they're running as part of a ticket. Now, the famous ticket was 2002. Tony Sanchez is running. And top to bottom, they have this
dream team.
You know, it was a bunch of pretty strong candidates.
Marty Akins.
Kirk Watson.
Yeah, Ron Kirk,
Marty
John
Akins.
Sharp.
I just keep coming back to Marty Akins.
Marty Akins. Yeah. You know, they had a relatively strong list of names that year, and so they ran it as a ticket. The complaint from some of the people who were not the gubernatorial candidate on that ticket was that they were completely overshadowed by the gubernatorial candidate. You know, they never say that when they win. Right. When the gubernatorial candidate takes everybody in on the coattails or the skirttails or whatever, nobody complains.
Old conventional wisdom. Let's find a rich Hispanic candidate to run for governor to save us.
Right.
New conventional wisdom. Oh, crap. Right?
There we go.
Yeah,
be careful what you wish.
Yeah.
Well, I just wonder if there's an effort for white to distance themselves in some way, officially or unofficially, from the rest of the ticket.
Well, if you're in any campaign, you know, any of these campaigns, but let's say you're in the governor's campaign, you look at it and you say, is anybody else on the ticket additive, or are they subtractive, or are they neutral? And if they're neutral, I really don't have time for them. If they're subtractive, I'm going to run away from them. But if they're additive, this could be interesting. And so I'm a little curious that there wasn't
more. So why not Linda Chavez Thompson?
I was a little curious there wasn't more promotion of Linda Chavez Thompson. And what she said at an Austin Democratic lunch 4 or 6 weeks ago was that she told this Austin audience that, you're not going to see much of my TV ads because I'm basically going to run San Antonio South. And, you know, our campaign's going to be generated to turn out people who haven't typically voted in these elections. She's talking about the border. She's talking about the border counties. That could really accrue to White's benefit. if he's running for governor and if she can really turn those people out. So
she actually said to me, she said, it is my job to single-handedly turn out the Hispanic vote that has historically not turned out. She views that as like her one role and mission.
To the extent that she's successful with that, that's clearly additive. And there's not really a negative to her campaign. I mean, she's not the kind of candidate that you look at this point and everybody goes, oh, that could be bad. I mean, nobody knows anything about her. I mean, she's a former union official. So one of the things we'll find out is whether the unions can turn out any votes in Texas. One of the things we'll turn out is how much a Hispanic name is worth. And one of the things that we're trying to figure out still is why White's campaign isn't more actively involved in that.
Will Dewhurst debate her?
I don't think that there's any talk of it so far, but
I don't know
why
if she's
not,
released right? all her tax returns. We'll have to look into that.
Well, we know he hasn't. Let's switch it back over to White and his message this week, kind of anti-TARP, anti-Obama.
Speaking about neutral, subtractive, and additive, the White campaign has clearly calculated that an association with Barack Obama is at least somewhat subtractive, in the sense that Obama's approval ratings in Texas by the last UT Texas Tribune poll were, I think, 40% approval, 60% disapproval, which is, you know,
bad.
It's not good. The White campaign understands it's got a problem. If it runs toward Obama, maybe it pleases the base, but it hands Mark Minor and the trained killers of the Perry campaign an opportunity. If he runs away from Obama, maybe the base feels betrayed by White. I actually think that there's more risk for White in the former case than the latter case. Running away from Obama is unlikely to cause Democrats who are otherwise inclined to vote Rick Perry out of office to suddenly stay home. They're going to vote for White regardless.
And he's specifically criticizing the stimulus, which I think a lot of folks are uncomfortable with.
Well, he's criticizing as I read the quote in the Dave Catanese is that how it's pronounced?
Politico.
Catanese Politico story. Why can't they all be named Smith? I sound like Betty Brown now.
Those Chinese names,
Politico interviewing White the other day, the quote was, you know, the spending is the problem. And I don't know that he was necessarily talking about the stimulus alone or just in general spend. Now, White positions himself, legitimately or not, as a conservative Democrat, a fiscal conservative. And so it's probably not that surprising that he's suddenly going all conservative Democrat on Obama on spending. And it's probably a message that resonates. The question is, does he get a single vote by walking away from Obama? And would he get a single vote by embracing Obama? That really is the tension.
Well, and does he lose a vote by walking away from Obama?
Right.
I mean, you know, the Democrats are, you know, with Obama, you know, there's the line sort of emerging or has emerged really on the attacks on Obama is that, you know, I guess Jeb Bush was the one that said, like Hubert Humphrey on steroids, that it's just a spend is the answer to every problem. And that seems to be a little bit sticky. So you want to paint yourself as, you know, I'm still a Democrat, but I'm a fiscal conservative and I don't spend money like that. And Texas has a balanced budget. So let's don't talk about that anymore. But I don't think you get anywhere running away from Obama. And in fact, there's this, we've talked about this before, this EPA TCEQ fine, where Texas has a permitting process for certain kinds of plants that the Environmental Protection Agency, essentially, it's a federal function that the feds have let the state take care of. Mm-hmm. The feds don't like the way the state's doing it, so they're taking it back. It puts Perry in a position of saying the feds are trying to take over, and White in a position of
puts him in a position.
Well, right.
It's like and, same song, different verse, right?
Yeah. Hit me again. Right. Yeah. Please, don't. Yes. Don't. Yeah. But it puts White in the position of defending the Obama administration. And I don't think he's really shied from it. I mean, there's been plenty of questioning, including here, about whether that was a good idea. But, you know, he's basically said, you know, the state's not doing its job and I'm with the EPA on this.
Yeah. And Team Perry immediately Tuesday morning sent out a press release reminding us that White supports Obama's cap and trade and Obama's this and that.
Right.
And so, you know, they're going to do their best to continue to link White and the president.
Well, I talked to him once, and he said that, you know, he didn't like the idea of the EPA using these sort of their power sort of as a weapon to force the state to do things. And he's not been he's not super enthusiastic about cap and trade. There was that memo he sent to Rahm Emanuel explaining how to sell environmental policy that mentioned cap and trade. And that's what the Perry campaign says. Oh, look, he's showing him how to sell cap and trade. I mean, he mentions how he says you should put off cap and trade for a bit in the memo, I guess leaving the door open for selling it, but it's not the exact same as saying we need cap and trade now.
The old saying in politics is if you're explaining, you're losing. And that was quite an explanation.
That was quite an explanation.
That's pretty nuanced.
Right. You lost, Reeve. Yeah.
That's the problem. I mean, you know, this is the thing, you know, when White came out with this 9-page memo. It's like, say yes or no. Don't write a
Well, and that's why actually the week before the convention was pretty good, because you could sum up what White's position on why he should be governor is, I'll work a full day. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't take very long to get through that. Right. I mean, you understood. The thing about Obama that I think is going to be interesting to watch, don't know how it's going to turn out, is by November – he may be running Obama on behalf of Democrats in Congress on his own record, he, Obama, passed health care, potentially will pass both financial regulation reform and energy reform if the Democratic senators would just stop dying.
R.I.P. Robert Byrd.
Right. The reality is that there may be some kind of record to run on if White can figure out how to do it. The problem is this is not every other state.
I think the only way that the Obama administration can stop being a liability to Democrats as if the economy turns in a significant way before November. And
true.
I mean, you know, if everybody gets up every morning and the sun's shining and the clouds are broken and you know, the economy's good, that's a different political environment than the one we're in now. All this other stuff is sort of the manifestations of I'm not really happy about the way the economy's going, you know.
And it's not as if Perry has been out in front on any one issue at such an extreme end of the Republican Party that White can say to moderates and to independents, aha, look, he's in the Berman wing of the party or the Riddle wing of the party.
Right.
Right, or the Kathy Adams wing of the party, frankly. He's not really – he's danced delicately, right, on the edge of that. Hasn't given White the opening on that stuff that he might have otherwise.
Right.
Meanwhile, the Green Party won't be on the ballot this year. District judge. Since we last podcasted, a district judge.
You sound sorry.
we were excited about the Green Party.
Hippies, at least?
You'll recall that we have podcasted about the Green Party many times. But in sworn testimony, Garrett Mize, a member of the Green Party, testified that Mike Toomey, chief of staff for Governor Perry between 2002 and 2004, and now one of the most powerful lobbyists in the state, paid him $12,000.
Check out Encyclopedia Hugh
over here.
I wrote his topic page.
Unlike Philpott, no notes.
That's right.
He even gets made fun of when he's gone.
That's right.
Check Toomey, Mike in the Texas Tribune topics page by Elise Hugh. Anyway, he has not been reached for comment, but this Garrett Mize did testify last week that Toomey paid $12,000 to the Green Party to essentially help them in their petition drive out of state money into the state of Texas to get the Green Party the number of signatures needed to get on the ballot. Judge decided that that's not cool and issued the injunction. So here we are today.
But the Green Party has repealed that.
Right. And so they're in the process.
They could be back.
Right.
Has there been an official, unofficial, any kind of explanation for why Mike Toomey felt he wanted to dispose of $12,000 in that way?
Nobody's gotten a hold of Mike
Toomey. No, he's not returning calls at this point.
And Mark Miner said, quote, our campaign had nothing to do with the Green Party.
Well, you know, sometimes you just get excited about something. You get an idea and you just go for it.
Does he strike you as – he strikes you as kind of like an Annie DeFranco sort of mosh pitter? I mean, that's because the reality is that whatever Mike Toomey may be, a Green Party guy psychographically, he doesn't strike me as.
So this is a guy who represented a conservative part of Harris County in the Texas House, was always a budget hawk. I mean, he's the only green he knows is
money, right?
Right.
That's it, yeah.
You know,
maybe he was confused.
You know, the theory here.
He thought he was giving $12,000 to the money party.
That's right.
That's it.
That's the explanation, folks.
Wait, I'm not getting $12,000?
Yeah.
You know, the theory here is that green votes take away from Democrats. There's not really any good data to back that up, with one exception, and it's in other states. It's Ralph Nader hurting Al Gore on the Green Party ticket. Now, I would probably argue that had more to do with the name Ralph. Well, had more to do with the name Ralph Nader than it had to do with green. And you know, libertarians bleed Republican votes, you know, regularly. So if you're in a tight race between a Democrat and a Republican and there's a libertarian in there in Texas, that accrues to the benefit of the Democrat.
And in fact, earlier this week, Julian Aguilar did an interview with Catherine Youngblood Glass, who is the name?
I think she's the newest wizard in the Harry Potter movie.
She does sound like that, exactly. Right. She's like Professor McGonagall.
Appearing at Hogwarts.
Right. But she's really, out there on her positions, like classic libertarian, you know, hands off everything, pro guns, pro gays, except apparently immigration. She's hands on that.
Hmm.
But otherwise, she sets up as a pretty straight down the middle libertarian candidate. And you know, is that person more apt to bleed votes away from Perry or White remains to be seen.
Right. Right.
I think Deborah Medina could have, had she been the Libertarian candidate.
Look, I want someone to come forward with a plausible explanation, not a denial of involvement on somebody else's part, but a plausible explanation on Toomey's part, if Toomey won't offer one himself. I want a plausible explanation, just one, plausible. Doesn't have to be accurate, just plausible. Oh, the money just fell out of my pocket and into their hands. I want some explanation for if, in fact, he gave the money, why?
Well, also, just this is more just a curiosity thing. It was, how did they get this kid, who's a Texas Freedom Network intern, pretty active in university Dems, apparently?
Right, they just knew each other. He testified.
Like Alger Hiss, who is this kid? Was he an embed?
Right. And oopsie.
You know, he might be like these Russian spies, where he's just been leading this totally false life for years.
Right.
I mean, look, the fact that it was Mike Toomey makes the assumption of involvement on the part of the Perry campaign more credible.
It's one of Perry's oldest friends in state government.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Miner says they weren't involved, fine. But it's, I mean, you.
And Toomey,
if Anita had paid the money, it would be worse. But beyond that, it's hard to imagine somebody closer to the governor.
Absent someone coming up with your plausible explanation, you have to assume that this friend and ally of Governor Rick Perry thought that the entrance of Green Party candidates onto the ticket would accrue to Perry's benefit, and so paid $12,000 to someone to get them petitioned and onto the ballot. You know, now one of the things you got to wonder about is, does anybody think that the governor's race, does anybody on the governor's side of this race think that the governor's race is going to be so close?
Is it $12,000 worth of competitive?
That a third party candidate is going to sway the result? And, you know, you have to have a race. Libertarians, Greens, whatever. You've got to have a race that's in the 3-5% margin
for it to have an impact.
For it to have an impact. And at this point, there's only one poll that has this race that tight. And everything else has it, you know.
I frankly would like Mike Toomey, on behalf of transparency everywhere, just come forward and go, yeah, I paid the money. What of it? Right? Yeah.
Maybe he could be the sub on the podcast next week.
Well, he could. Yeah, yes.
I'm less interested.
I'm thinking who else should be off.
There's a seat open for you,
right,
Mike.
But I'd like him to say, yeah, I did it.
I'd just like to know why.
Yeah. Right, because the question you raise is really important. Is the assumption of the Perry campaign, assuming that Toomey was related to the Perry campaign, which they deny, that the race is going to be close?
Well, you
are
know,
you worried?
Donald Segretti engaged in dirty tricks in the Nixon campaign.
Yeah.
Ultimately, in a campaign against a guy who was never going to win. It's not outside the realm
That's
of possibility
true.
That you mess around in a campaign that you're going to win anyway just because
yeah.
you do.
You know, and
just
it almost doesn't time. Matter. I mean, of course it would be a story, but it doesn't matter to me really whether he was doing it in concert with the Perry campaign, because he was clearly doing it for their benefit.
As a tribute to.
Right. Yeah. Right. He's trying to help them out. So what is it that he thought would help them out? What is it about the Green Party that he thought would help them out? What is it that he thought about the race that he thought a third party thing was going to be beneficial to Perry?
You think he can get away with continuing not to talk?
Yeah.
In perpetuity?
Yeah. Unless he gets hauled into court. I mean, you know, it's going to be uncomfortable, and, you know, people will be banging on his door a lot. But, you know, Toomey's made a career out of not talking.
That's true. I remember a lot of times walking up to the Capitol.
I've known him since he was a House member. He's made a career out of talking. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to share the anecdote of many times when I'm walking up to the Capitol one way and he's walking the other direction, he suddenly has to take a phone call.
Yep.
And I'm not sure if he's ever really on the phone.
It might be someone calling for him to not respond to. You don't know. But we should be clear that the Mike Toomey, Mize plot was not the one that the Green Party's actually ended up using. They used one that was almost identical after they decided not to go with that one.
Right, so Mize was testifying. Mize was actually testifying about an earlier plot to help get signatures, which Toomey was involved in. But the current plot was the one that the judge ruled against.
Right, they didn't. The Green Party didn't end up going.
I missed episode 13.
The Green Party didn't end up going through with.
The smoke monster paid the $12,000, and I don't even watch that crappy show, and I get that joke.
That's Lost, by the way, is what he's referring to. They didn't go through with the plan presented by Mize and given to him by Toomey, but they did shortly after that do the identical thing with this GOP consultant out in Arizona, Tim Mooney.
Right. It's interesting how remember how 2 weeks ago, those halcyon days, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Dave Carney's involvement in this.
Back in the day, right?
Now we've just forgotten it. And now it's kind of great how the arc of the story has changed. Well, it's really pretty interesting.
It is.
Got to say, would love it. Mike, if you're listening to the podcast.
Open invitation.
Please return my call.
Please return Ross's phone call.
And you have an open invitation to sit in on the podcast anytime.
Right.
We'll be back next week. On behalf of Evan, Ross, and Reeve, I'm Elise. Thanks for listening.